Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So Frank, AJ Styles, and Amos are back from a month of partying in the Caribbean, apparently, and dominated New Day. Seemed to pretty much just send them on to the into some other division, because no one's going to take them seriously as taking challengers anytime soon, despite a spirited promo beforehand by Kofi and Xavier. I suspect, based on the 2-0 record of RK-Bro, they're actually building up Orton and Riddle as the first, like, credible challengers maybe a month or two from now, hopefully not sooner, against AJ and Amos. What do you think of the presentation of AJ and Amos in general, the way New Day have been portrayed, and then kind of the RK-Bro idea? Because I was thinking earlier, who are they going to build up to be the tag team that maybe has a chance against Amos and Styles?
Well, the first thing I want to say is I'm jealous because I was on reserve last month and I didn't fly. So if they're in the Caribbean having drinks and stuff like that, I want to get in on that, because if I get those overnights, that's what I'm usually doing. So I want to know where they went. I want to know if they took a cruise. I want to know if they took a flight. You know, I want to join in on that action. As far as RK-Bro, I think that's exactly where they're going. I think that they're building them up. I don't know if they're going to do it at WrestleMania Backlash, although, you know, if Vince McMahon wants to do something, he can't wait. So I could see it happening there. But I think that's exactly where they're going. And you know what? That's fine. I mean, this is the time of year where you do that stuff. You know, you experiment with different things. I mean, Randy Orton, he's actually been a heel for about 3 years. I know we talk about Randy Orton flip-flopping back and forth. And he's actually been a heel for a little while now. So I'm actually fine with him going back to the babyface role. And, you know, for Riddle to rub up against him, that tells me that they got plans for Riddle. That really does. And they should, because the guy is talented. I mean, I could do without the scooter and the bro stuff and all the silliness. And I would like to think maybe they get away from that at some point. But I think that's where they're going. I think that they could beat AJ and Omos, if, like I said, if not at Backlash, maybe at, you know, presumably Money in the Bank, assuming that that's the June pay-per-view. And then you see what happens with AJ and Omos. I mean, I don't think that's a long-term thing. I think at some point Vince is going to want to see Omos on his own when he's comfortable, you know, that, which doesn't necessarily mean Omos is ready to go in the ring. It's when Vince is comfortable. So he'll decide when that is. I think it's a good direction, and it'll be something that I think people will be interested in seeing with RK-Bro.
Yeah, I think the presentation, I mean, anytime Vince McMahon gets at all interested in pushing something in the tag team division, I'm for that. I'm a fan of tag team wrestling, and he seems excited about this. And Amos is most definitely a novelty act at this point, and he isn't, like, polished. He's doing very little. But if there's someone who's as big as him and you're in a company, and you're, for better or for worse, Vince McMahon likes the variety of sizes, especially medium-sized and up, but he will have fun sometimes with people under medium-sized. But he really does like that variety of characters. It's just it's the way he's always promoted, and it's who he is. So if you embrace that and you look at Amos, they're going all in, trying to talk about him as this larger-than-life thing. It's heavy-handed. It's over the top. One might say it's insulting to a lot of people's intelligence to just act like a guy who's tall should be so scared because he's tall, right, without something else there saying not only is he tall, but he's also super credible. Here's his background. Here's his backstory. Here's why we should believe he's tough. He's not just tall. So there's things I would tweak about this. But if you're going to push a tall guy who can't wrestle much, they're doing a good job making us sort of, I think, care about him and wonder where this goes. And they're talking about, you know, being under the learning tree of AJ Styles, and Amos can learn that way. And it's really credible to have AJ there to, you know, hit a leaping phenomenal form over Amos, which is probably their new tag team finish that involves Amos doing nothing but standing, which he's had a lot of practice at, and that might be the safest route to go. I just think from a WWE-style storytelling standpoint, I think there's people are intrigued who watch Raw going, who's going to step up and challenge him? And that makes the Riddle-Orton pairing, as odd as it is, that, you know, who had this on their bingo card for 2021? Riddle and Orton against Styles and a guy called Amos. But I think that's where we're heading. And if we are, I mean, I'm on board. I'm okay with it. I think on a show, a diverse pay-per-view lineup with a variety of different types of styles and matchups, I think personality-wise, this is intriguing. It doesn't eliminate some of my issues, like we're just supposed to think Orton's a cool dude because he likes Riddle, even though Riddle's annoying after what Orton has been through and done. Like, this idea of wipe the slate clean, all that matters is what we're doing this week, if we tell you only to worry about this week. But when it comes to other things, we want you to think hard about all the other things that have happened in the past. I don't like the selective attentiveness to history without some sort of transition. But that's not WWE specialty. That's not what Vince McMahon does well. So, we accept what we can't. We accept what we have to, and then look at the lay of the land. And I think it's an interesting change in the tag team division compared to just New Day against another team or something like that.
Oh, 100%. And you're right, especially with Randy Orton, what made him all of a sudden in 1 week's time, right? Because it was, I think it was 2 weeks ago that they had the match, and all of a sudden a week later they're just pairing up. And, this is a guy that not even a year ago was kicking legends in the head. To have this sudden change, it's like, how do we get from that point to this point, but I've just gotten to the point, to be honest, and this is not me giving WWE a pass by any stretch of the imagination. I've just gotten to the point where I just don't expect it. I don't expect that attention to detail, and it's a shame because it was there years ago, even as far as 15 years ago, and I'll talk about that when we talk about my show later. But it's just completely gone out the window. That is a little frustrating with Randy Orton. But again, knowing that, putting that aside, I'm interested in the pairing. I'll say it like that. And 100%, I agree with you with Omos. I mean, it's better than what they used to do with guys like the Giant Gonzalez many, many years ago, which was a complete bust. And then bringing in the Great Khali, who just couldn't wrestle. I mean, I think it was John Cena where he finally had a decent match, putting him with AJ Styles. AJ can wrestle, and, they don't have anything for AJ right now on the single scene. So, why not? Especially if you value Omos in the future, if you value him and you want him to be an asset down the line, putting him with a guy who's a tremendous asset in AJ Styles is just the best solution. So thumbs up on both fronts.
All right, very good. Well, let's pause and introduce the show, and then we'll get to some other topics too, and welcome caller input on the tag team scene and what Frank and I just talked about. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, May 3rd, 2021. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, PWTorch.com, our main news and commentary and live event coverage website, and also host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcasts and post shows, which are free or ad-free and plug-free for our VIP members and Patreon supporters, and also several VIP podcasts, including Everything with Rich Fan, Post-Pay-Per-View Roundtables, the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, and The Fix with Todd Martin. So go VIP to hear a wide array of formats and topics that I cover throughout the week for VIP members with a variety of great staffers. The other voice you hear is the co-host tonight, and that is Frank Pediani from PWTorch.com. He does the phenomenal Raw and SmackDown previews. Frank, welcome back to the show.
Thank you kindly for the invitation. Looking forward to talking to our callers tonight.
Absolutely. So speaking of callers, let's give out the phone number if you want to join us here on the conversation. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Please push 1 on your keypad to flag yourself. That indicates that you want to be on the program. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so let's... let's do it. Let's get to phone calls, Frank. How's that sound?
Absolutely. Bring them on.
All right. So up first, we'll go to Kyle in Baltimore, I believe. Kyle, is this you?
Yeah, it's me.
Hey, Kyle. Welcome. Yeah, what stood out on Raw tonight?
Alexa, again. Every week, she's always fascinating to me every week. And I, at this point, I'm starting to, I don't think it, get annoyed or bored. I'm just the repetitive start. I thought by now she's going to attack someone by now and not talk about it. So she can talk about it for a couple of weeks now and like to the point. Yeah, I guess in some ways I'm kind of glad glad they're waiting for it. But I don't know if they're waiting until Backlash is over. I guess that also makes sense. But get Backlash said and over with. But I don't know who she is referred to attack at this point. I guess that is, I would think it'd be Asuka, would make the obvious sense. That was the last few she was feuded with. I guess when Backlash is over with, when he's done with that triple threat match, which I'll get to that in a second. But I just thought that was, I guess I can see her and Asuka continue on with that feud when Backlash is over with. Speaking of that too, adding Charlotte, I guess it makes sense. You know, again, the show is called WrestleMania Backlash. These three had had matches before, so I guess it makes sense. I mean, that's the name of a show called WrestleMania Backlash. I'm expecting rematches on this show. I guess the only thing that's not a rematch, I think, in my brain is that's happened. I don't know. Everything on this show feels like rematches on that show. But what? How do you feel about these added Charlotte to the match? I think it would be a better match because, like I said before, Rhea and Asuka before, their matches weren't all that great. When Charlotte is added, hopefully it'll be better because I know how good Charlotte is. So what do you think about that?
Frank, go ahead with your thoughts on Alexa and then Charlotte being added to the match while this fire truck drives by the window here.
Oh, jeez. And while my cat climbs up on the counter here, I knew he was going to be a nuisance tonight, and here we go. Okay, so let's start with Alexa Bliss. You know, I've been on this show where I've said that Alexa is passionate about what she's doing now, and she's acting the hell out of it, but I'm getting to the point where I'm just getting effing over it. I really am. It's just, it's such crap. It's such something that I'm just not interested in on my wrestling program. And, like, I'm watching this, and I'm just saying, like, who cares, you know? And I probably shouldn't be saying that doing this post-show because I should give answers, you know, and that's why I'm here. But, you know, I'm just telling you how I feel. It's such garbage what she's doing. I mean, if this is what she aspired to do, when she was watching Raw as a kid, you know, I guess power to her, you know, if she's happy doing it. That being said, I could see her targeting Asuka. I mean, I could honestly see her targeting anybody because if they want to get the character over, I mean, for all intents and purposes, she can go after Mandy Rose, you know, because if you think about it, like in any horror movie, you know, they're always going after the pretty blonde, you know, or the pretty girl that's vulnerable. You know, so it could be her, it could be you know what I mean? Like it could be one of those things. And, you know, if they want to get her actually in the ring, you know, and get her a win, then that would, you know, one of those women would be the women to do it. I mean, she could go after Asuka, you know, I mean, I don't see Asuka getting back the championship. So, you know, if they want to get her there and get her feuding with her, because they did feud towards the end of last year, that could work. I don't know if it was you, Wade, or if it was Bruce who suggested Charlotte or whoever wins the title. I mean, yeah, you could do that as well, but I see it more likely being Asuka, you know, or one of the women that she could just, you know, kind of work with and, you know, have a match, whether it's just a regular match or, you know, some kind of cinematic match. So that's Alexa. As far as Charlotte being added to the match, it makes it better because I don't have the faith that Rhea and Asuka can have a good match right now, especially after what we saw on Raw the night after WrestleMania. I mean, they had a better match at WrestleMania, but not that great. The problem is it's not so much Charlotte. And Kyle, I know this wasn't really your question, but the Rhea character is just so off. It's honestly... she feels ice cold right now. She feels so ice cold that if I'm watching that match, I don't even know who I'd want to see win. I mean, it's probably scary for me to think this, but I'd almost want to see Charlotte win, and that's bad because I'm a Rhea Ripley fan, you know? But, yeah, it makes it better, and we'll just have to see what happens when they actually have it.
With the story that we've seen so far, it just I don't understand why Ripley wasn't brought in as a babyface.
Exactly.
If Charlotte's going to be a heel and Asuka's going to be sort of transitionary, or I mean, she's in a way she's always been obnoxious, but you have to have the right opponent for it to be sort of endearing because it's in the face of annoying a heel. And Ripley just doesn't fit. Charlotte as a heel is good. Asuka being Asuka works, but there needs to be a babyface in this, and Ripley, I just think Vince miscalculated with her. I don't think she's comfortable in this role. I don't think that she feels what she's being told to exude, and it comes across, and it's disappointing. I think deep down, Rhea would be better off in a position to be opposite of Charlotte as an up-and-comer trying to take a top spot, but doing so in a way where you don't resent her or find her annoying. And instead, you got both Rhea and Charlotte sort of battling for booze. And I just do not understand that choice that Vince McMahon made. And maybe it'll become clear over time that, you know, it's a bump in the road to get to someone that makes sense where they split off in each feud with fellow babyfaces or something. But, man, Ripley was that new, fresh babyface act that they could have worked with, and I think damage has been done. As for Alexa, I don't know where they're going, but, Frank, I'm more okay with it than you. For sure. I'm intrigued with where they go with Lily and Alexa, and if Alexa ends up in the ring or if Lily ends up being embodied or controlling some other wrestler. I mean, I think it's at least suitable continuation of what they've been doing. And if you don't like what they've been doing, I get it. But I don't think that this is a step back from all the Fiend stuff. I think this is a continuation of a lane that Vince McMahon wants Raw to drive in. And I still think Alexa's doing great work with it. I think she's probably proud of what she's doing in terms of her acting and interacting with the dolls. So I'm higher on it than you. And I think it's flexing Alexa's acting muscles. And I am genuinely intrigued to see where they go with this storyline for better, you know, for good or bad. I'm intrigued.
Well, it's better. Listen, it's better than her. Well, she probably can't wrestle as much. I know she's had concussions and you know, injuries and stuff like that. So I will say she's into it. I will not any podcast I do, and I've done this and I've covered this topic with you multiple times. She is 100% into this, so I will not take that away from her. God bless her. Okay, if she's into it, it comes down to a matter of taste. You know, and there are some people that are into this and there are some people that are not. And one of my concerns, and I'll die on this hill, I think that there are a lot more people not into it than into it. I mean, the people watching probably are, but I think stuff like this drives people away. And, you know, that's just my concern with this moving forward.
There's no question. It's subjective, not empirical. We can't prove it, but, me saying I'm intrigued by it doesn't mean that I can argue against me being in a minority and that this is a polarizing approach that drives more people away than it appeals to. I just don't know either way. I know in our Twitter poll, in a you know pretty good response on Twitter, it was a big chunk of people. I think it was roughly half were into this or really into it. And so I don't think it's like a 90-10 situation is what I would extrapolate from that. But the question is it important enough to feature for people who like it or tolerate it if it actually drives away much more passionately people who don't like it? And I just don't know the answer to that. But, but Charlotte being out of the match, it makes it feel more important. And I don't know if anyone was looking forward to another Asuka Ripley match because of the lack of chemistry. So, and, you know, I like the Adam Pearce-Sonya dynamic. I'm curious to see... You know, Pierce is starting to stand up for himself and show a spine, even as a middle management guy who's scared to lose his job. And Sonya seems super confident the way she just stared him down at the end of their segment. But Pierce ultimately is her superior. So I'm curious where we end up with this. And if Sonya ends up in charge of one show as a heel, or if this leads to her breaking off from a management role in wrestling again, I'm intrigued with where this goes. I didn't expect it to be playing out with Sonya and Charlotte as sort of the fulcrum of this.
Yeah, it's the dynamic. They ended with a couple of awkward finishes. I don't know if the camera just didn't cut away in time, but they, like, in both sequences, they said what they had to say, and they just looked at each other. And they looked at each other a little longer than I expected, and then the camera cut away. So I don't know if that was just a matter of, okay, you know, they forgot to cut or what. But it was, yeah, it's intriguing to see where they're going. The only thing that was interesting was, you know, like, why didn't Pierce reverse the decision? I mean, I guess, you know,
yeah.
That you know, I guess that's what they wanted to do ultimately anyway. But, you know, if it, seriously, are you kidding me? You have to play with a teacup for crying out loud. This cat, I swear.
Honestly, I can't get enough of YouTube videos where cats just walk up to things on shelves and just knock them down, or things on tables and knock them down.
Yeah. I kid you not, he was on the couch for the entirety of Raw, laying down, sleeping, and now he is laying down in front of the computer. It's amazing. Yeah, that's the only thing. Like, you know, if Pierce, if Pierce has the authority, he could have just reversed the decision and said that Charlotte isn't in the match and Charlotte has to earn her way in. You know, so that's the only issue with that. But
and I think they told a story of, you know, Pierce is nervous to bring down the marquee level of a pay-per-view, right, even if he thinks it's unfair how it's going. So, I mean, I think the principles of Pierce, if we're to read into it or try to find some consistency, is he wants to do the right thing. But if somebody says doing the wrong thing or something that's just not necessarily quite right, it doesn't feel right, but it'll lead to more business, he sort of caves in because his character is at the mercy of doing what's – I hate the phrase – but doing what's best for business. And he's trying to sneak in doing what's right, even though his actual job description is do what's right for business, or he struggles with that. And so if Charlotte isn't added to the match, he's done what's right. If Sonya adds Charlotte to the match, now he'd have to do something that would actually actively reduce the marketability of the show. Right. And that's where he kind of freezes up and goes, I can't do that because I need my job because I've got a mortgage to pay. So I think he's relatable. I think there's enough consistency there within the way WWE offers us right. consistency.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to throw back to Kyle, but go ahead if you got to follow up.
No, I was going to say, like, it's almost like Sonya is essentially doing his job and he doesn't like it. Like, he wants to be the one to make that decision. He knows that Charlotte belongs in the match, but Sonya made the call. So he's like, damn it, you know, like, I wanted to do that. You did it. You shouldn't have done it. You're wrong, but anyway.
No, and I disagree with that, actually, because I don't think Pierce wants to add Charlotte, because Charlotte, he's upset she's not still suspended. I think he realizes Charlotte adds marquee value to the pay-per-view. He was trying to avoid adding her because of his sense of right and wrong.
Hmm.
But once Sonya did it, that put him in a position to have to actively take something away from the show that's marketable. He's okay not having Charlotte in the show because he has principles. But once she's added, he can't take it away because now he's taking a show and making it worse. It's one thing to the absence of compromising what's right and wrong to make a show better, he can live with and justify. But once an underling activates improving a match by, and I put quote marks around it, but, you know, adding a marquee name to a title match, that's where he feels like, I don't want to risk my job by undoing it. But I don't think he wants Charlotte in the match.
Gotcha. I understand where you're coming from. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Kyle, back to you.
Thing back to Alexa is that for me, I've always been an Alexa Bliss fan, and so I enjoy her now than I did when she teamed with Nikki Cross. When she teamed with Nikki Cross, was fine. I think last time I found Alexa interesting was when she was the goddess character, and she was the 2017 as the champion. So. And that's last time I found Alexa interesting. And this year's has been more interesting. And I don't know what she's going to do. But she has to be in the ring with someone at this point. That's how I just view about that. And when it comes to, you know, Charlotte and Oscar, Rhea, that's, you know, I guess it should be a better match. And then I guess I'm looking forward to see. I would think Rhea will retain, but I can see them putting back on Charlotte because like I said before, Rhea's champion isn't, I mean, again, I like Rhea, but lately her champion isn't all that great, again, compared to Bianca Belair. Bianca's champion is a lot better, how I view, than Rhea is right now. So I can see them putting in the backcourt Charlotte because of the way Rhea is. Hopefully not, but well, Rhea isn't really doing anything interesting right now. But that was it. Thanks for our call.
All right, cool. Kyle, thanks for calling. Yeah, you bet. Have a good week. All right. Our number is 646. No, it isn't. That's the old number. The new, I'll never drop that. That's so weird. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. As soon as this number rolls off my tongue, Frank, they're going to change it again on me. But at least it's on the screen. So it's not that big of a deal. But all right. Let's move next. Let's move on here to area code 802. 802, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Good evening, Wade and Frank, my Giants brother. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing very well. And it was a little jarring the night of the draft, but it took me a few minutes, but I saw what the Giants did, and I am very happy.
Yeah, next year's draft will be really good.
Unfortunately for our friend Zach, I have to root against the Bears. Because if the Bears suck, then that number one pick means something. So
yep.
I love you, Zach, but sorry.
All right, enough football talk. I'm sorry. I can hear Wade going, cut it.
Fine.
I'm going to take you from the top of the tag team division all the way to the bottom. And you got to talk me off the ledge here. Did the Lucha House Party really beat Shelton and who's he watching? I know where the angle went after the show afterwards, but while I was watching that match, I said, I can't believe it. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. And I don't know.
Let me jump in though, because that was purposeful. It wasn't, let's just have them have Shelton and Cedric lose, and we're going to establish their jobbers, and next week they're going to lose again, and then they'll be gone for a week, and then they'll lose again. This was the final straw in something.
Mm-hmm.
It may or not, may not be good for Shelton and Cedric, but I actually liked that this made the losses seem more justified, because now you have a storyline. You know, where Cedric, we can get into his delivery on the mic, but Cedric lashed out at Shelton and said, you're the reason that we got kicked out of Hurt Business, and you're the reason we lost. And then Shelton retorted later on, I'm the only one who saw an upside in Cedric. He's the only reason he got a chance to be in Hurt Business. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get some Shelton-Cedric matches, which I think could be really good. I don't know what
mm-hmm.
we get out of it. I don't know where they land, but you had to have Lucha House Party win. And frankly, you've got to have, if you're going to have Lucha House Party on the roster, if Randy Orton can go from the heinous acts he's done as a heel to now being a happy-go-lucky babyface, putting up with that amusing or annoying riddle, however you feel about him, if they can just flip the switch and make him, you know, a completely different character, we have to forget about everything, they can put Lucha House Party on a winning streak. The Giants can go from a bad team to a great team, you know?
No,
they
can't.
And with Shelton and Cedric, yeah, I know, well.
Yeah.
So to me, like, Lucha House Party was a good team because I think they need to win every once in a while or they'll never be taken seriously. And, of course, they're going to beat a team that's on a losing streak and is on the brink of breaking up. So, I mean, to me, that made sense, and it made the recent losses for Cedric and Shelton actually at least lead to something.
Yeah, listen, you know, on a show, on a three-hour show where, you know, one of our biggest complaints is the same people wrestle every week and they don't use half the roster – I'm all for using the Lucha House Party. I'm all for using Drew Gulak and Angel Garza, even if he stuck a rose up his ass. I'm all for that. I'm all for the entirety of the roster getting used, you know, so that way you lengthen the show, you deepen your bench, you use people, and you have them when you need them, especially when there's injuries. And I know I'm kind of talking like a you know, speaking about a sports team, but it's the same thing. You know, you want to be able to plug people in and use them. As far as the Lucha House Party, I agree. It was more of a mechanism than anything else. And I think we got to where we needed to go with Cedric and Shelton. I thought Cedric yelled a little bit much. I thought his delivery was a little on the weak side. I wish he would kind of – I thought of you right away. I knew that, you know, we would talk about that. I think there's a little too much yelling. I think that, you know, if he tones it down and delivers his message, it's perfectly fine. And it's nice to see a little fire out of Shelton. I mean – One thing about doing Then and Now is I'm reliving a lot of Shelton matches, and boy, that guy had something. He really did, and he might still. He might still. I mean, I wouldn't. I'm not saying he's going to get a world title run anytime soon, but if I'm WWE, I'm not giving up on that guy. I think there's a little something there, and again, more people used, more matches you can have, more, you know, even if he eats losses, okay, but is competitive, he can help put somebody else over so you don't have to see Drew McIntyre wrestle Bobby Lashley every week or Drew McIntyre wrestle Braun Strowman, you know, and we go around in circles every week. More people, more assets, more value, more good matches.
Yeah,
Nick, I know I jumped in. I definitely want your feedback on what Frank
said. I was gonna bring up that point too, is that tonight, really for the first time in quite a while, we got since Paul left, we got the building up of that second tier where you've got, like for Sheamus now, if you think about it, they've got Humberto Carrillo, he can fight, Garza, he can fight. Mansoor, he can fight again at some point. Sheldon, he can fight. Cedric Alexander, he can fight. It's, you know, what I've found so lacking in Raw, especially in SmackDown too, a little bit, but it's a shorter show, but in Raw especially, they were so concentrated on the very, very top of the card that it just got boring and mundane. And now I'm hoping this is a trend that's starting that, you know, as COVID's loosening up a little bit and stuff and they're being able to bring these people back, that we'll get a second tier on the card that we're interested in, that we're interested in seeing Carrillo, you know, battle Sheamus and then go off and battle Garza and then go off and battle Mansoor or whoever. I just think it adds a lot. They still have to book it well, and, you know, that's a big if.
I mean, I think one of the most important – I think every wrestling roster on any national TV show needs to have stars, and they have to be treated as stars. But you've got to have an undercurrent of up-and-coming stars. You've got to have a sense of upward mobility, and I feel that way about sports. You know, you can have dominant teams in a league, but you've got to have up-and-coming teams, you know – draft, you know, surprises in the draft who do really well, some good free agent signings, and suddenly, oh, there's this team that's on the rise, and watch for them. Maybe not this year, but next year they'll make the playoffs, and in 2 years they'll make a run at the title, or 4 years from now they'll make a run at the title. Like, that journey is a big part of telling a sports story, and WWE is just not particularly good at that unless you're Amos. Then it's like, whoa, you know, he's a big guy, let's tell his story. Humberto, I'm interested in that story. Tell that story and don't humiliate and destroy and define him down before you get around to needing to push him. And you know, one could say that's already been done with him, you know, running around on the 24/7 stuff. But I think it was low profile enough, and he looks good enough. Just overall, the moment doesn't look too big for him. So more of that. Like I just think, you know, they've got this checklist of, did we have comedy? Did we appeal to women? Did we appeal to old men? Did we appeal to babies? And there's a checklist on the back of the Raw format sheet for the writers. Like, there needs to be like three checkboxes. Are there three acts right now that fans can get behind who might be a star 6 or 18 months from now? And are we telling that story effectively and full of hope? And have we picked the right person? And that, to me, is a box that needs to be checked for every wrestling TV show, and WWE is especially guilty of not paying attention to, you know, to planning for that down the line.
Jim Ross has said it on his podcast before. You always have to think of the next star, okay? And yep. I think that's perfectly said. And you always have to assume, okay, what are we doing in 6 months? What are we doing in a year? You know, I mean, if you kind of take the New Japan approach, okay, where Ghetto, you know, has his plan out for the year, okay, building stars, moving people through the Young Lions school, moving them up to the junior division or the heavyweight division, and always just creating that next wave of talent where, let's just say in a year from now, you can have an Humberto Carrillo, you can have an Angel Garza, you can have a Mansoor in a Money in the Bank ladder match. That's three spots covered right there, done, you know, instead of having to use retreads and you know, other people. And then who knows, maybe Garza wins the Money in the Bank, you know, and he gets a big push and he does well with it and he cashes in, you know.
Yep.
So you always have to be just, you know, thinking. You think short term and you think long term at the same time. And I think WWE would be better off for it.
What's interesting is those guys could also then help revitalize your Ricochets, because he would do great work with those guys, all those guys, you know, and that could potentially revitalize him after, you know, he took on, he lost to Brock Lesnar in 32 seconds or whatever. You know, I mean, it can help revitalize some of these guys who came in with such great fanfare and then just were, you know, kind of, you know, brutalized.
Ricochet, Mustafa Ali, all these guys that are uber talented, okay, you put them on NXT or even SmackDown and they would be much better off. But on a three-hour show, they can't find time for either one of those guys.
It's more frustrating with Ali than Ricochet, because, I mean, the reality is Vince McMahon wants a personality, and Ricochet doesn't have one, and he hasn't carved one out. And I think he came into WWE, and he's just kind of – there's been – his presentation is, look at how athletic I am, and I've got a great body, and I'm super athletic, and I can run twice as fast as 90% of this roster hitting the ropes. Well, right, but you work for Vince McMahon, and he's not going to push you because you can have great matches in Japan, or that you're an indie darling, or you had five-star matches. He's going to push you because he knows how to fill TV time with you on the microphone, and he can describe you to his fan base in a couple sentences in a way that has a hook. And Vince didn't find that with – he's found it with Riddle, for better or for worse. That's just exhibit A. I don't have to do it with Riddle. Oh, let's have him be a guy who talks – people's ears off and rides a scooter and is sort of a beach bum / pothead character. And Vince is running with it, and it may or may not work out, but that's what you need to get a push. Ricochet didn't have, he does not have a discernible personality, not on a pro wrestling jump off the screen way. So it's the cool thing to lament Ricochet not getting a push, but and Vince should work hard for somebody as talented as Ricochet to figure out why he's not getting a push. But it's Ricochet's got to do his part and do more than he showed when he was given opportunities on the microphone. And he was flat out awful on the microphone. And you work for Vince McMahon. Mic work and personality is a key. And there's plenty of people who can do flips and dives and work really good matches, but that's not the business Vince McMahon is in. Ali, on the other hand, has a personality. He is constantly working. He's trying to reinvent himself. He's doing things on his own and has his entire career, and he's showing that initiative to do so. And he's trying one thing after another, and when he tries, he does a great job with it. So, and I'm not trying to be too hard on Ricochet, because Ricochet's super talented, and I get why people are upset he's not getting a push. But and Vince should have done more, but he's got to do his part and shine when he gets that chance, and he hasn't. Ali has. So Ali's the guy I want to see get a push. AJ Styles, it could have gone either way with him. He could have been the Ricochet 5 years ago, but AJ's got a personality. You know, Adam Cole has a personality. If he comes to the main roster, I worry about him against Lashley as a heel. If Adam Cole is a heel against babyfaces, I worry. As a babyface, he's going to be great if there's a size differential. The problem is he just sort of naturally gravitates back to being a heel so often, even when they try to turn him face, based on his promo style. So I don't want to go through the whole litany of all the names out there, but you've got to do your part. And Vince has to do his part. And when those two things don't happen, a lot of fans get frustrated at underutilized talent. And I think that's – so anyway, I'm all for everybody who's talented getting a good shake, but everybody's got to do their part. And I don't think Vince or Ricochet did their part in the Ricochet push, for instance.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, the I gotta just pull a point on the Randy and Riddle from backstage.
Yeah.
Randy, and he's always come across as, you know, kind of this stoic, slow, you know, headlock in the middle of the ring and stuff. And he did something tonight I thought was great, is when Riddle's yammering away, he does the, you know, seal your lips thing. And then he
yep.
holds out his hand
yeah.
for Riddle to put the key in. And then he closes his fist. It was just a small little pinch of salt that was, I got to give Randy a whole bunch. I don't know if he came up with that, if he was scripted to do that or what, but it was, I really popped for it big. And
that's
I
funny.
Hope they keep this tandem together for a little bit. Just, I want to see how they, you know, I don't know, you can probably find out, I don't know how they react to each other behind the scenes, you know, whether they're friendly or not, but I mean, their chemistry, even though it's so total opposites, it definitely seems to be, there's something there that I
enjoy. Reminds me of Booker T and Goldust a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, and Randy has a history of having various stars that he's teamed with, that the key is how will they play off of Randy. So, yeah, I mean, Booker T and Goldust is a good example in a more specific way in terms of a semi-normal guy and a weirdo. But and
I love it.
Who's the weirdo in that?
Well,
that's
I think
awesome.
It's self-evident, but I think you could also make a case for that. But yeah, so no, it's fun, and I mean that's part of wrestling is seeing. I'm an advocate and have been for a long time of mix and match main event singles wrestlers in tag teams. I think it's a way to freshen them up. You know, we see a wrestler and a top main event wrestler in a top feud, and especially if it's for the world title. And if it doesn't work out and they don't win the world title, like, where do you go? And it doesn't – I'm not saying it always has to be a tag team with another main event or, you know, upper mid-card person on the rise where you'd be intrigued by it. But I think that's a great way to just pause that or distract and deflect from the idea that this guy was on top but didn't quite make it to the top. And – If he just moves down to a stale feud against another singles guy and they have to manufacture and something that we care about because Randy's no longer in world title contention, it's like, well, what are they fighting over? And you have to have the right chemistry there. So I like the idea of main event wrestlers rotating to tag team division for 6 or 9 or 15 months. And then all of a sudden the lay of the land is different. There's been a draft. There's been some new stars on the rise. And now you've got fresh matchups and it feels fresh again. So In a general sense, I'm for a Randy and Riddle type tag team. And it doesn't always work out, but in this case, I think it could. And I think Riddle, who seemed hopeless just a month ago, I mean, and even 3 months ago, now there's like, well, wait, he's going to hang out with Randy. He's going to be protected because of it. He's going to gain a little bit of a cult following among fans for scenes like we talked about, Randy and Riddle playing off each other. And it'd be kind of fun for the things you point out, Nick. Riddle could come out of this with a top-tier push because, again, Randy's been done heinous things as a heel, and now we're supposed to like him. So Riddle can do jobs forever and suddenly be pushed as the top guy. And that's the way Vince has always operated. Whatever story he's telling this week, he expects his fan base to buy into. It creates a headwind, but he does it. So just because Riddle's been jobbed out and not used well doesn't mean Vince won't try to push him later, and it might work, especially if Riddle was truly underutilized, and when given a chance, fans latch onto him. And this is where crowds are going to come back, and it's going to kind of dictate a lot of things. If people go nuts for Riddle, Vince is going to go, oh, okay. You know, I mean, so in a way, it's up to the fans also how they react to everybody. Riddle, Ricochet, Ali, anybody who's Lucha House Party, for that matter, anybody who's done a lot of jobs but is still around and there's a chance for upward mobility, the crowds are going to play that part.
Riddle is going to be interesting to watch. You know, I remember a young guy by the name of John Cena many years ago before he started getting booed when he was doing the Thugonomics stuff. You know, all of a sudden people just fell in love with him and went crazy. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
he's Riddle's a different character, but it's that visceral right visceral feeling that people could have.
Yeah.
Riddle is potentially one of them.
Cool. Nick, anything else for us?
Yeah, last point, and then I'll let you guys go on the Alexa thing. I appreciate her talent and stuff like that in this. The one thing I don't want to see a repeat of the Fiend thing. Like, I really hope she doesn't put on a mask and no sell and stuff like that. I want to see something different, whether it's she brings in another female wrestler and she's kind of the manager and whether it's Nikki Cross or somebody else. I don't want to see a repeat of the Fiend. I mean, that to me would be a total waste. And with that, I will let you guys go. Always great to talk to both of you, and have a great week.
Cool. Great, Nick. Thanks.
Have a good night, Nick.
Yep, you too.
All right, cool. Our number here is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show, or email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Hey, Frank, how can people follow you on Twitter?
Absolutely. Follow me on Twitter at Frank Pettiani. That's at Frank, then spell the name Pete, and put an A-N-I at the end. And let me tell you, that way of spelling my last name has given me more success over the last few years. Previous to that, I would try to spell it, and people would just never get it right. They would put R's in there. P-A-T-E-N. No. So I have found my way. So at Frank Pettiani, always happy to chat wrestling, sports, amongst other things.
Awesome. All right. We'll move next here. Let's see. We'll go to Skype call here. International 111, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Frank.
Hello? 111 dropped off. All right. Well, call back if that was a technical issue. And so let's go ahead and bring Javier in. PW Torch VIP podcaster and frequent kind of roundtable session here at the end of our caller sessions. Javier, welcome to our Raw Post Show.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Frank. How are you guys doing?
Really good.
Very good, Javier. And by the way, thank you for accompanying me with the New Japan Pride podcast a couple of Saturdays ago when I was putting together outdoor furniture. I enjoyed it.
I always remember what I do when I listen to, like, certain podcasts. Like, there's such a link between, you know, if you're biking or walking or shopping or working on a project in the garage or the yard. Like, it's weird, but it's like the podcaster comes with you and you associate. There's that association. It's really interesting how that works.
I'll be destroying a shed within the next few weeks. So I don't know if I'll have that same capability because I'll be using a Sawzall, but we'll try. We'll try. Always important to fit the podcast in.
Well, I'm usually going to be in my car driving since I do that a lot of that for work. So,
yeah.
you know, so I've had several close calls on some of the 6 episodes where I actually teared up laughing while on the highway. So come with a warning.
Oh, my God.
My jokes are going to cause your demise?
It's the repartee. Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I just rewind when Todd curses. That's usually when I rewind because it's just hilarious the way it comes across. So that's usually the highlight of the show for me.
Have you ever heard Florida man caused a 10-car pileup while listening to The Fix? You know who that is. Decent show. Better than a bunch of the last few. I think mainly because of the new blood that they brought in. I am getting a little bit worried that I think they might theme backlash around triple threat matches with both the men's title, the women's title, and it's a possibility that the tag team title can also the U.S. title could go that way. And, I mean, hell, even the tag team titles could be added into triple threat as, like, a gimmick, an all-triple threat pay-per-view.
Oh, God. That's just trolling me. You're trolling me with that suggestion that that's where they're going. Yeah.
Yeah, because both Mansoor.
Well, go ahead, Frank first.
I don't know who suggested that. I saw that it's possible with Mansoor and Sheamus and Humberto, but I don't know. I think I see that more likely being Humberto against Sheamus, and then they get to Mansoor later. See, again, if this was the kind of show where they, you know, just gave people wins, you know, over lower tier guys without a story being told, like even in the Angel Garza match, he had to shove a rose up Drew Gulak's ass. Like you can't just have a match on this show. You got to have some kind of story, some kind of comedy attached to it. So, you know, that's the only thing. But I would think Humberto and Sheamus stays one-on-one. I could see it with the women's tag, though, you know, with Dana and Mandy and Lana and Naomi. I could see that. So that's a possibility. I don't know what else would be. Did you suggest something else, Javier?
The men's tag with Randy Orton and the RK Bros and
I think that's
Almas
too soon.
And
yeah, that's too soon for me.
I think it's even too soon for Vince McMahon. When they say now you've got two wins, so now that you got three wins, we're going to put you in a title match. I think they're doing a slower build. I hope so. It's the only way I'm endorsing this. I think if you just throw them in there. I mean, I know you're just saying maybe this is where they're headed and you're almost fearful of it. I get you're sort of – this is like, this would be great. But I don't even sense that they're giving them that big of a push. I think they want to kind of ride this out and take their time and let it build before they put them in there where they have to make some decisions about finishes. And this is one where you want to let it percolate, want that anticipation to build of what if those two faced off. I think I would say it's more likely they won't battle until SummerSlam as opposed to if the only other choice was they battle later this month.
Yeah, well, I mean, you throw in like also the New Day in so they can take the yet another loss. Or they also had these guys meeting with the with Riddle meeting the Viking Raiders, which I got a kick out of. You know, which team are you behind, the Vikings or the Raiders? Neither, the Cleveland Browns. I didn't see that one coming.
Yes,
I like that. That,
yep.
I don't know. It's some of the stuff is beginning to grow on me. It's funny because that scene with Randy Orton and with Elias. When they were doing that tomato spot, it took me on a roller coaster because I'm like, oh man, this is we're gonna call back to this from last week, and the way that they set up the camera, I'm like, oh, this is going to be one of those where they throw it, and even though they're looking down the hall, it's going to be somebody else who gets it. I wonder who it's going to be. And then I saw it was Randy Orton. I'm like, okay, so this is going to set up something with them. And I was like, you know, really down on it. And then just to see Riddle just like go by and say, hi, Randy, and just go through the screen. At that point, it like went full circle, and the surrealness of the scene just had me laughing because it was just, you know, it was so stupid it became funny.
Yeah.
Frank, is that something impressed by that scene?
Yeah, I agree. A lot of the Riddle Randy Orton stuff is pretty hilarious. So it was one thing too. I don't know if you mentioned this, but like when they were talking, I could see Randy Orton. He's trying not to laugh. Like he's just holding it in, you know.
Yep.
Like I could just
I
see
agree.
Him, like,
yeah.
You know, okay, yeah. I'm supposed to be this, you know, this menacing guy, this mean, you know, tough guy, but this guy's pretty funny. But I don't want to laugh, you know what I mean? Like, so I thought that was pretty well done.
What else, Javier?
And I do hope Elias is okay because that move looked like it sucked. It looked like Riddle landed on his head. You know, and the way that he went for you know, he grabbed his head, that did not look that looked like that sucked. So My favorite commentary moment was when Corey Graves said, if you were as big as Almas, would you respect anybody? And then Saxon, you know, grew a pair and said, I would care, Corey, because I'm a goddamn decent human being. No, sorry, that's not happening. He said, yeah, I see your point.
I missed that.
It would be so nice if there was pushback, wouldn't there? Of just the obvious thing to say. Like, this idea that the only thing keeping you as a decent human being is that you're not rich enough or strong and powerful enough to be a complete dick to everybody you meet and just squash and humiliate. Like, what? I mean, like, it's fine for Corey Graves to say that as a heel commentator, I guess, but shouldn't both other guys push back and go, whoa, wait a second? And make the point, no, we're not all just sad that we're not big enough to be jerks, Corey. We're all like, it's such a weird thing to think. And again, a heel commentator, say whatever you want to get people worked up, but the announcers should push back, and they don't often enough. Because I think people, you know, speaking of the headsets, it doesn't jump out to them that that's not a thing, that's not just Corey speaking truth. How could there be a counterpoint to that?
Although Adnan Virk did have the commentary moment of the night when Garza shoved the rose up Drulak and he said every rose has its thorn. Now for him to call out a Poison song, that guy is all right by me. So bravo to Adnan Virk.
That was Virk was that's a whole other thing. I mean, he didn't talk a lot, but
no, he didn't.
He has become entertaining, but in like because he doesn't have wrestling knowledge. And he doesn't have wrestling instincts, like a WWE announcer instincts. Like, he has Drew McIntyre live on the air. What's this about promo class you wrote about in your book? And what was, I mean, like, was that something he was authorized to say? Or did he take my advice last week and he said, you know, I'm going to brush up on something. I'm going to read Drew's book and learn about this business that now I've been hired to comment on the national television show. And he, like, the promo class intrigued him. So he, like, doesn't understand, like, the division of – you know, what you say in a book and you sort of open up a little more versus what you talk about. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Vince, for some reason, fed him that line. But I can't – I would bet against it. You don't know what he's going to say next. I don't think we – did we get any moxies this week?
Yes.
I don't think I heard moxies. But the thing – go ahead.
We had two. We had one on SmackDown from Cole, and we had two. And I think it was – today that Corey said it correctly, and then Virk said there was a lot of moxie in this match.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But Virk doesn't say a lot. Like, Corey Graves is the dominant voice on Raw now. I'm enjoying Virk being in completely over his head and having a level of obliviousness to how in over his head he is, because I just don't think he gets at all the culture of WWE announcing and pro wrestling. I think he's just a guy who gets a kick out of wrestling, and he's got sports credentials. And he might develop quickly and catch on, and if he's reading Drew's book, that's good. You know, he should be immersing himself in every – he made a reference to someone on a podcast too. So, I mean, I think that's good, and I think that builds credibility that he's reading Drew's book and he's listening to WWE podcasts, but – he's got a lot of catching up to do to have the instincts for this. And, you know, Graves is calling all the names and moves and the big moves. And Vink is just – Virk, excuse God, I keep doing that. He just keeps saying weird things. Yeah. And so, I mean, for me, it's you know, kind of entertaining. But it's – yeah. Anyway, Frank, your thoughts on the job he's doing.
Listen – I think it's easy to pick on Virk, and everybody does it, okay?
Vink, Virk. No, it's Virk.
It's easy to do it, but listen, the guy was thrown on Raw with absolutely no experience, all right? When you got two shows on the internet that he could very well be doing and getting experience in either 205 Live or the main event, all right? You throw the guy out there, you know, what do you expect? And listen, I'm not saying – you know, if you're getting paid and, you know, you take on a job like that, you've got to take on the responsibility. I understand that. But, you know, it's basically throwing the guy to the fire and expecting him to, you know, catch on. And listen, when you're watching Raw, when you're watching a premium show, you have expectations, okay? And I think it's a little unfair that he was put in that spot right out of the gate, you know, when he could have been somewhere else. But I think little by little, he's picking it up. Like, I think his intro to Raw tonight was a little bit better. I think there were spots where he showed a little bit of fire. You know, he's got to find his voice. He's got to find it. And, you know, this is also the time, and I talked about this a little bit earlier, you know, this is the time of the year where you experiment with stuff. You know, maybe Vince wanted to see what he had. And in a couple of months, you know, when things start to heat up, maybe he turns around and says, look, you know what? This isn't working out the way I'd like. Why don't you try 205 Live? And then they move Tom Phillips back to Raw. I mean, Phillips seems to be okay bouncing around. I mean, they've done it to him before.
I think they think Virk is too big of a name to bounce around or start on a lower show. I'm with you though. This is, I mean, me picking on Virk is not personal. Like,
right.
It really is just calling a strike and a ball a ball. I mean,
right.
I'm not here to, it's not calling, saying, you know, someone didn't swing at a good pitch isn't like this person's a bad person, but Virk is in over his head. He was put in a spot he's not qualified for, and that's clear. Now, is it like this egregious drag on the show? No, but it's an example of WWE's booking hiring practices that if you've worked for a big sports corporation, we're going to mark out for you and feel so honored to have somebody with your credentials as a face of our brand to make us seem more mainstream and legit. That's not serving wrestling fans. That's serving your insecurities as a pro wrestling promoter. Yeah. So they should be putting the best wrestling promoters, the best wrestling announcers on television, not the people they're marks for because they happen to work for ESPN or MLB Network or whatever it is that seems to get Vince and Kevin Dunn and Nick Khan to be like, oh, this is a great hire because he happened to work for another major sports guy. Like, so you got to be good at your job and you got to serve wrestling fans. And Virk is not doing that. He's serving me as someone who has something to kind of make fun of. You know, the ginger-headed juggernaut, that's his nickname for Sheamus. Like, what? If I'm Sheamus, I just pull the guy aside and I throw him against, if this is like 1978, I throw him against a wall and I'm like, don't ever call me that again. That doesn't, you're trying to be clever with some sort of alliteration, I guess. And it's not what my character is. And so stop trying so hard to prove your worth with cleverness and turns of phrases and vocabulary and start getting over the storylines and the characters in a way that's appropriate to the tone of the character. I don't want to overreact to that, but it's an example, I think, of what he's going to be searching for, which is I need to be cute and clever in order to have a gimmick as an announcer that justifies my presence. And I'm fearful of that. If he sprinkles it in, but everything else improves, okay, then that's just, you know, that works. Hopefully he picks his spots a little better.
Right, and you never know if they're trying to attract, like, you know how WWE is with their little cross, promotional things. You never know if they're trying to attract, oh, you know, we have baseball fans that like Adnan Virk. So, you know, if we have them as the Raw announcer, more people will watch Raw that are baseball fans.
And you know, there's not a baseball fan out there who's going to watch Raw because of who the announcer is any more than I'm going to start watching college football because Tom Phillips starts calling it or Corey Graves does a game. I mean, it's just like, that's not how the world works. I think you're right, Frank. I think that enters their mindset, but I think it's mostly the insecurities of, you know, how they're perceived. And it just they feel so much more legit when they have somebody from ESPN or MLB Network on. But yeah, I mean, the idea that somebody's going to watch a product that they don't like or have any connection to because of some announcer who says, I mean, I'd be interested in the word count. I mean, I bet Virk didn't say 120 words on this show. Like, I mean, I could be way off, but
I had that in my notes. He tagged out during a lot of matches. It was, I think it was the Bobby match or the tag team title match. But I'm sitting there. I'm like, where's Virk?
Yep.
Where is he?
Yeah.
You know, so
anyway, Javier, back to you.
The one other thing with Virk that I do put that in quotations when I say like, is that he sometimes asks the logical question, you know, of based on what
that you're not supposed to ask.
He's like, you know, and he's done it a few times now. My brother actually texted me when he said something along the during the Miz and Morrison that match where he said, is Miz jealous that Morrison might be taking some of the spotlight away from him? And like, and Corey was like, shut up. Basically, because I do think that that's the story they're kind of trying to, I think they're heading in that way slowly, because there have been some, you know, moments where it looks like Miz has been taking Morrison for granted, and he jumped the gun in the storyline. Because he's
I love that. Yep. And that's the thing. I mean, he has no instinct for what he's, for the rhythm of pacing of Vince McMahon storylines, and where things that are obvious are not meant to be brought up by announcers, because it'll be more surprising when we get around to actually pulling the trigger on something. And So they brought it upon themselves, and so we can enjoy it from afar.
on the women's side, with Alexa Bliss, she mentioned about wearing Lucy, right? Man, my memory's gone. Lily. She likes red. Lily, there we go. I was going to say something, but I'm not going to say it. My brother knows what I'm talking about. Lily.
I have two cousins. Javier, I have two cousins named Lily and Lucy. So you're messing with me.
Uh-oh.
My name is Lucy. My niece's name is Lucy, and her cousin's name is Lily. So, and I'm going to say that one of them is pretty much worth that dollar. The doll likes red, so that makes me think that it might be Eva Marie's first opponent.
I thought that too.
How do you do that? How do you bring Eva Marie back and then also immediately feud whatever they're doing with Alexa? I mean, you got to pick you got to pick who wins and loses then. It seems like they should build up to that. Go ahead, Javier.
Because Eva Marie would, it's something that Frank said that, the cheerleader in the house, Eva Marie would fit that description. So that was my first guess.
Yeah. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, it depends on how you bring her back. I mean, I would think, just knowing how Eva Marie is, I mean, we don't have crowds yet, but I would think she would be brought back as a heel. It just fits her, you know, it just fits her personality a lot better. But, I mean, if she's brought back as a baby face.
Corey Graves was – oh, sorry, our connection went all over. I was going to say, Corey Graves went so overboard. He was just pathetic, panting like a dog at Eva Marie showing up on the screen. And I know it's like Vince is in his ear going, oh, come on, Corey, act like, you know, it's like, but my God, did they put him in a bad position to just act like that? It's like, it's not funny. It's just, it's pathetic. Like, you know, dude, settle down, you know? And I mean, at least they had Saxton make fun of it and go, do you need a glass of water? And he's wiping his brow. So, I mean, it's played for comedy, but they've done that with him with like Mandy Rose. And it's just, I don't know. It feels like, you know, if you find Eva Marie hot, you don't need Corey Graves to make it super clear, you know, like what he's thinking to an unprofessional level. Like, you just wouldn't see that anywhere else in the world. There'd be no, like a newscaster, like there wouldn't be a new reporter hired who's good looking, and they go back to the anchor desk and the newscaster go, oh my God, oh, she's so hot. Like, in no sports, oh, we got a new sideline report. Like, it just feels out of date and inappropriate and unnecessary and unbecoming to have Corey act that way, even if it's funny, you know, even if they think it's comedy.
Vince used to do it with Elizabeth back in the day, you know, and Jesse used to make fun of him.
Yeah. Anyway, Javier.
And crazy second choice was Sonya Deville, who was wearing all red. That maybe Sonya Deville is possessed by Lily, and it's why, you know, because she did say that she's already been up to mischief, and that might be what's prompted Sonya Deville to play her hand the way that she has.
I like that better. That would be very unconventional and out of left field. But if they have a, you know, kind of a plan in place, a game plan for it, that would it'd be interesting. I mean, it feels completely like they're in separate bubbles. So for them to overlap, it would be strange. But I mean, it's a theory. What do you? It's a theory worth bringing up based on the hope that WWE is dropping clues through Alexa's promos that will connect to something that is tangible, Frank.
I don't know if this is a factor, and Javier, that's a very fair and excellent choice. The only thing that might work against it, and I don't know how Sonya's dealing with it these days, but you know when she was stalked last year, right, and had to leave WWE for a little while, I don't know if they want to go there with her. I don't know if it's a story that she'd be comfortable being involved in. So that would be the only thing. I mean, if she's fine and everything is good to go, then that's something that could work. And I honestly didn't think of that. So, as I said, if she's all right and everything is good, it's definitely a possibility.
And then the third person was Becky Lynch, but that's like a long
time. Yeah.
Oh, Becky.
She's been teething. If that's like her first feedback. I don't know, man. I see Rhea as a heel. I think it might be because of her time with NXT UK and her feud with Toni Storm. I thought she was such a great heel during that run. And, you know, she basically, when she went to NXT, she was still basically that character, just slightly tweaked, and that's what, you know, got her over as a babyface. So I don't know. I think that she had, you know, she is a good heel. I think it's just that the way that I don't think she's into the way that they script and do the scenes, because it seems like she's kind of like pausing too much, and like she obviously looks like she's thinking too much when she's out there. And I think that that's pretty much been the biggest problem she's had.
Frank, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, when you go to Raw or you go to SmackDown, you've got to tell your stories in a certain cadence. I mean, you know, they do a lot of these, you know, one person comes out and takes their turn talking, then the next person comes out, and there's a certain flow that they look for. And I get the sense, you know, even though they do a lot of that in NXT, I think that the character is allowed to be a little more themselves. And the same thing in NXT UK. And, you know, the thing with Rhea, it's not so much she should be a babyface or she should be a heel. I mean, I think she should be a babyface, but if she's going to be a heel, define her character. I mean, they basically just threw her on the show, had her beat Asuka. She interferes in a match for no good reason. They haven't built off of that. And, you know, now she's actually talking crap to Charlotte, which makes her a babyface, but she hasn't been presented that way. So it's basically all over the place.
She deserves one or the other. Yeah. Just make it clear and put her against somebody who helps make it clear who she is before they've defined her. I mean, we just don't know who she is.
Right.
If you know, the Raw audience doesn't.
And I read that during the tag team match where she was on the heel side, that the people on the screens were told to cheer and not boo Rhea Ripley, to treat her as a babyface, which is, you know, weird too. So
yeah,
I don't think they've decided exactly what to do with her. So obviously she's, you know, if she's being told, hey, just you know, fly down the middle, you know, don't look too much one way or the other and say these exact words, but don't say them too heelishly. Don't say them too face, you know, just, be somewhere in the middle. And then like, what are you going to do? So, yeah, I mean, it's rough road for her ahead.
Good points, Javier. Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah, and Frank, since you do the primer for Raw, how do you think they're going to get out of the Lashley Drew McIntyre next week? because obviously that's what's going to happen.
I don't even think Vince knows right
now.
Oh,
I think we know. Braun's going to interfere.
Braun's going to interfere.
I mean,
Mason,
that's an easy one. That's a softball.
Or Mason
I mean,
D-Bar.
You're right, Frank. Yeah, because they brought them up again this week.
Yeah, that's true.
And they were not, and let me say this. They were not on the show. I a possible alliance with Braun and Mason T-Bar. I mean, Vince is into his odd couples, and that would certainly be a completely odd pairing. And I know Mason T-Bar just talked about, you know, having no allegiance, no alliance, you know, doing their thing. But they were very strangely not there tonight, but they could be there next week.
I agree. Javier, what else?
I think that's pretty much it. One last thing. I'm really happy to see Garza back. I'm assuming he'll probably have a short thing with Drew Gulak, but where do you think he goes from there?
What do you think, Frank? I mean, does this, if you're an Angel Garza fan, does this seem promising that he's getting to shove roses down people's trunks and then kick them after saying, I'm going to shove? Like, is this promising or not?
I'll be very blunt and honest with you. I'm not going to get excited about it because we've seen this sort of thing before. You know, Vince might have just had a revelation today and said, you know what? Let's feature some people that we haven't had on TV in a while. Let's just see what happens, you know? And you see Umberto get, even though Umberto's gotten time, but you've seen Umberto, you see Mansoor, you see Angel Garza, Drew, you know, all these guys that never get on TV, you know? And then the next week you don't see him, and then you don't see him for weeks, you know? So I know he's been getting a little more TV time lately. You know, he was giving roses to Nia Jax last week. So maybe there is hope. I'm just not going to get excited about it until I see it on a consistent basis, if that makes any sense.
Yep. Very good. Javier, appreciate the call as always.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Yes, you too.
Have a good one, Javier.
All right, let's shift to some emails here, Frank. And not a ton this week, but John from Tennessee said, the main event match was so predictable and not necessary. Another direction that led to Braun getting pinned 2 weeks before a title match. And now we get the same match next week, but sub in Drew. Why not make all three guys look strong heading into the pay-per-view? Would you guys be in favor of these guys being squash matches instead of facing each other? So that's question number one. This is like, WWE has too many top guys and women, I mean, just wrestlers, facing each other in various combinations before they get to the pay-per-view. And WWE's really stuck on the formula of, we can't have someone wrestle someone they're not on a program with. And we also, they say, we also need main events. We need marquee main events to hold the audience. We got to put big names against big names, or people are going to go, well, this show's weak, I'm tuning out. So this is what we get as a result of it. Yes, I'm in favor. I don't know if I'd say squash matches, but it's too bad WWE doesn't have enough top stars to rotate how often we see them in the ring so it seems special to see them in the ring. Seeing Drew against Lashley next week, however long it goes, and whatever the finish is, does kind of take it off the table as a particularly sellable pay-per-view rematch, no matter what happens, which then makes you think it's inevitable Bobby's going to win, because otherwise you'd have to go with, well, I guess you could have Braun win the title and then go back to Drew Lashley, but because of the way Braun lost here, it wasn't like decisive. But I mean, by the time, you just don't want to be sick of seeing guys against each other by the time you get to the pay-per-view, Frank.
You know, this is the same song, different verse. I mean, this is their formula. They have a match at a pay-per-view. I think I even put this in the primer today. They have these matches at the pay-per-view, and they do different variations of the match leading in. Like, I'm surprised we didn't see, Drew and Braun against Lashley and Mason T-Bar, some kind of, you know, goofy combo like that. But that's just what they do. This is Vince does not believe in, you know, just building up people, making them look strong. And that way, when you get to the actual match, there's intrigue in seeing the result because the wrestlers haven't faced each other. I mean, I go back to, I just did WrestleMania 17 with Brandon LeClaire. All right. You see that match between Stone Cold and The Rock. Stone Cold and The Rock didn't wrestle each other three or four times before you got to the pay-per-view. And by the time you got to the pay-per-view, you were salivating for that. You couldn't wait to see it. Okay. Same thing with, you know, even years later with Batista and Triple H. I don't think, I mean, they might've been a couple of like a tag match or something like that, but nothing like they do now. And Vince just feels like he has to put on a big match, you know, because it's Raw, you know, and he's getting a lot of money and he's, you know, going up against whatever. I mean, we got the Lakers, Nuggets game right now. So, you know, well, we got to compete with that or, you know, whatever it is. And that's just the way he books. You know, he doesn't have a second tier of wrestlers that he could use, you know, to have Lashley win a match or have Braun win a match or Drew. And that way, by the time you get to Backlash, all right, now there's some intrigue because these guys haven't touched. So I wish I, you know, I know what would be better, but it's just the way Vince books.
Yes, yes. All right, so part two. Because I want to bring up Mansoor here. It, also, it's good to see Gulak and Garza getting some TV time, a call-up, and Mansoor, and, of course, the return of Eva Marie. How would you guys book her? Everyone go VIP. John from Tennessee. So I in particular just want to say Mansoor I thought was booked well. I thought he had a presence. I thought that he didn't look intimidated by Sheamus. He signed the contract. But he came across as someone who, in real life, it demands being treated with respect. And that came across in the segment with Sheamus. He was a man, not a cowering rookie. Mm-hmm. And I liked that. And he looked good getting tossed around. I think he's got a ring presence. And I liked what I saw tonight. It was, you know, it's a small enough sample. I'm not going to make broad assumptions about how good it can be. But, you know, in this setting, it didn't seem too big for him. And I'm curious to, again, he's, you know, talking about wrestlers on a journey from the undercard. Let's see if he can make this work. And I enjoy wrestling episodes more where I think there's people who aren't already main eventing pay-per-views who are in a program that seems like they might be on a course to having a chance to work their way up the card.
It's always a lot more fun. And you talk about journeys all the time. It's always a lot more fun to see these guys get put on TV, you know, have good matches. I mean, it's better to have them get wins, but again, that's not the way Vince books. You know, he books marquee matches on TV and he uses, you know, screwy finishes to get out of them. So it is what it is. But yeah, I like the way, and I've always liked Mansoor. I always liked him. I liked him when he had that match at whatever Super Showdown, whatever the hell it was. You know, anytime he's wrestled on the Saudi shows, I've always liked him. I think he's been on 205 Live mostly. Do I have that right? Because I don't watch 205 Live. So
they brought
up
that he was on it. You know, they didn't want to bring up the Saudi shows. So they didn't bring that up,
And
he did a little NXT. But he hasn't done a ton of television.
No. But, no. I like when you present a guy from the beginning. You present him in a way that, you know, you should watch this guy and you should respect this guy. And, you know, he's not afraid of Sheamus. He stands up to Sheamus. So, thumbs up for Mr. Mansoor. As far as Eva Marie, he asked about Eva Marie. Yeah. I mean, my instinct is push her as a heel. And, you know, she's got a look. I mean, you know, not to sound like Corey, but she's definitely got a look. And I mean, if she can
that's
wrestle,
fine from your seat, Frank. Oh, I mean, sort of. I mean, like, it'd be weird if you were just like, oh my God, I got the hot version. She's so hot. Like, just like a fan at home sitting with his buddies, yes. But if you're a podcaster and that's the tone of your show, fine. But Corey Graves, it's so weird. To me, it just feels weird.
Yeah, you had to see me and my friends watch pay-per-views years ago. Oh, my God, the conversations. Anyway.
That's the thing, yeah, and that's fine. We just don't need Graves to be quite so relatable. You know, that's my anyway.
I know. But, I know there was some issues with her attitude, and she wasn't, you know, all that likable behind the scenes, and there was a lot going on there. So, I mean, if she's cleaned that up, you know, and she's good to go and she can cut it in the ring. I mean, she's definitely someone that you could present as a star. She looks like a star. So,
you know, we'll see what happens as she makes her way. I'm assuming she's going to go right to Raw since they did the vignette here. So, you know, see what happens.
Yep. All right. Up next here, we'll go to Zach in Texas. Mickie James revealing that an unnamed executive told her that women's wrestling doesn't make money at WrestleMania a few weeks ago. Should have been shocking, but it wasn't. It was clarifying. It was clarifying. It now makes sense why the women get the absolute bare minimum from creative. Literally just enough to say, hey, we got women on the show. They simply don't care. If they did, the women's tag title match, would have had a real story surrounding it, and Nia wouldn't be in it trying to wrestle. I think, you know, Vince sees something in her, but he saw something in Giant Gonzalez too, and we know how that worked out. What was shocking was Stephanie being tone-deaf enough to tweet an article about people watching women's sports. Who does she think she's fooling? Everyone knows now the Women's Revolution was a giant PR campaign that WWE's heart was never in, and now it's over. Case in point, the vignette promoting the return of Eva Marie, a woman who fits the prototypical mold of a diva. Looks good, can't wrestle a lick. Frank, just Zach brings up as a specific but also a broad topic, how is WWE doing in terms of divorcing themselves from the diva era and having an appropriate mix? I mean, wrestlers who populated the roster, the type of wrestler populated the roster for sex appeal, that's fine. That's life. That's entertainment, of course. But are they doing a good enough job in terms of, and this is where I get to kind of Corey Gary's reaction, where, okay, somebody can be hot. That's not the defining characteristic all at a high percentage with the women compared to men. Where's the voice of the woman going nuts for, you know, it's like Charlie Caruso and Angel Garza, and they just didn't go anywhere with that. Mm-hmm. So how were they in terms of walking the walk and not just talking the talk? And have they regressed, or do you think they're with some bumps in the road doing a pretty good job?
I legitimately have my concerns. I mean, they did main event with Bianca and Sasha. They did make a pretty big deal out of Rhea and Asuka. You know, they did have a tag team title match, which wasn't all that great, but, you know, whatever. So, I mean, the women did get their time at WrestleMania. So I don't want to say they're in a bad place, but there are some diva tendencies now, where you're seeing people like Mandy and Dana get a lot of TV time, but people like Ruby Riott, who are, you know, just super talented, and Liv Morgan, well, I don't know so much about Liv, but Ruby, not. And she's not your prototypical hot diva. I mean, no disrespect to the woman. I adore her, and she's talented, but, you know, she doesn't look like Mandy. She doesn't look like Dana. She doesn't look like Lana. So there are some diva tendencies right now. I don't think we're there yet, but I would, you know, Zach is right to be concerned. You know, he's right to have his eye on that. And it's funny he brings up Mickie James, because I just got through, I'm kind of spoiling the next edition of WWE Then and Now. I just watched her match with Trish Stratus from that show. And even Rich and I talked about Mickey when I had him on my last episode. So, look, I think we're in a better place now than what we were, you know, say 10 years ago, you know, even 5 years ago, okay, or a little more than that. But I'd kind of watch and see what they're doing, at least on the main roster. I mean, NXT, I think they're doing a better job with that division, but I keep my eyes peeled to see how things go on Raw and SmackDown.
All right. Up next is JB from Detroit. I noticed that tonight the announce team put an emphasis on Damian Priest being from the underground of New York City. I also noticed that what Miz does wouldn't fly in New York City. He said that during his brief promo. It's not that I have a problem with this necessarily, but it seems that it kind of came out of nowhere. They've never really mentioned it before, and it's as if there was some edict from management to bring back bits of Priest's NXT character tonight, because at the end of the match, they mentioned that Priest would live forever. It's not a bad thing to add new wrinkles to a character as it evolves, but it shouldn't come all at once and be so blatantly heavy-handed, in my opinion. A good way to play it, Vince would be like, what other way is there but heavy-handed? A good way to play it would be to say that Priest had gotten away from his NXT roots and was determined to get back to them to achieve optimal success. I always love the show, Go VIP. And then he followed up by going, also, should Drew McIntyre be mentioning that Vince told him to take promo classes? To a casual fan, they might not even know what a promo is in the context of wrestling. And to more hardcore fans, this is kayfabe breaking. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt Vink just Virk. God, I can, Virk just did that. that Virk did that just to show off that he was reading Drew's book. And he just has no instincts for what the universe is that announcing exists in on cable versus the separate universe of podcasts and TV shows. He just doesn't know. I mean, Drew, I thought, handled it well. You know, I mean, Vince taught us to express ourselves, but it was a awkward question. But we covered that. So yeah, I noticed that too when. When Priest was saying, this one fly in New York City, Miz. What do you think of that and the totality of what JB asked about?
Well, I guess I smiled a little bit when he mentioned good old New York.
It doesn't get enough attention, Frank. It's just this hidden city that nobody talks about, and I'm glad that WWE can give it some attention.
Where is that, New York? What is it? yeah, I mean, listen, with Priest, I mean, if it's something that's going to work for him and if it's something that's going to, elevate his character, then I'm all for it. Especially if he feels natural saying it. And the more we have wrestlers feeling natural talking about what they're talking about, the better.
Yep.
So, if that's, and we've seen way too many times characters come up from NXT. We're seeing it with Rhea Ripley. Look what they're doing with Rhea Ripley. We see what makes these people successful, in NXT, them completely getting away from it when they come up to the main roster. So, if that's something that's going to work for him, I'm all for it. I'm not offended as a New Yorker if anybody thinks, not anybody's worried about me, but like, I don't think a New Yorker should be offended if they say that, because New York has a reputation. I'm not going to hide behind that. It is what it is, So if that works for him, that's fine. And overall, I like the presentation of Priest. I mean, again, assets that we could use deep in the roster so you can have more matches and, just have more, stuff to present the fans and the same four people fighting every week.
So, Frank, we covered everything on Raw. I wanted to cover those emails. So let's close with you talking about your VIP podcast, WWE Then and Now. Some interesting topics lately and an all-star cast of co-hosts. You've made some references to the show during the podcast tonight. But introduce people to it and tell them about what you and Rich and you and Greg have talked about most recently or anything else that jumps out.
Absolutely. So, it's WWE Then and Now. And the show has kind of morphed a little bit. What I'm doing is I'm going back and talking about old shows, but also relating it to today. If I see any parallels in what took place on those particular shows, we're covering, we're going to current events, I got a little tongue-tied there, and doing a comparison. So, for example, I had Rich Fan, who was just an absolute delight to work with. We covered WrestleMania 21. And we covered the parallel between John Cena and Batista winning championships that night to Rhea Ripley and Bianca winning championships at this past WrestleMania, and what it means and, what they thought of Cena and Batista at the time and where things went and, where things could potentially go for Bianca and Rhea Ripley. So if you haven't heard that episode, check that out. As far as the show with Greg, we covered WrestleMania 27, which anytime you bring up that WrestleMania, you get a lot of eye rolls because it was not very popular. And the line of your report was, I think I speak for wrestling fans when all of us hope that the show gets better from this point going forward. I think that was after the Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler match. So that was a pisser to talk about with Greg. Oh my God, what a joke! What a joke that was. I remember being with my friends watching that. We're just like, what is this? This is just awful. So anyway, it was good to talk to you. And we also previewed WrestleMania 37. We were a week away from WrestleMania at the time. And it was interesting, too, because Miz was the champion then. And
yeah.
Just had a title run recently. So it was good to, you know, kind of go back and forth.
I love Miz, by the way, pointing to the fact that he's won so many titles as putting him in the same sentence as Steve Austin, Hulk Hogan, The Rock, and John Cena. Like, of course, if this were real life and Miz were a real person, that's totally something Miz would say. You know, like, I am in the same – so, I mean, it's great because it's irritating. Because you're like, yes, that's true, Miz. That is – those are bullet points on your resume, but that doesn't mean you're in there at their level. And so I think it's a good heat generator.
But you know what, though? Exactly. And that is what a heel should be doing. He should be delusional or she should be delusional. And that's what gets heat on them, because you want to see them get their ass kicked because, no, you're wrong, and this is what's going to happen. So anyway, this coming week, I can't wait. I have Zach Haydorn, who is going to be joining me this Thursday. Hopefully he's getting at least 2 hours of sleep a night. I completely sympathize with my man Zach, and God bless him and his new daughter. I hope everybody's doing well over there. We're going to be covering WrestleMania 22, and not just talking about the show, but getting an in-person perspective because he was in the building. So I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say. A lot of great matches on that card, Mick Foley and Edge. There's some current stuff I want to talk about with Edge with that, not to spoil things. And I think I have some interesting conversation lined up when we talk about John Cena and Triple H. Wrestling for the WWE title, some potential parallels I see today. And I look forward to bringing that up to Zach and getting his thoughts. So yeah, check it out. WWE Then and Now. Love doing the show and love getting your feedback on it. So hit me up on Twitter at Frank Pettiani with any thoughts.
Excellent. Go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip, pwtorch.com/govip. We have an express sign-up form. You don't have to sign up with PayPal if you don't want. You can use your credit card or debit card directly now. And we now have one-click access to Apple Podcasts. So when you subscribe, if you're an iPhone user and you use the native podcast app, you don't have to worry about your username or your password. You'll get a link in the email. Click it. Boom. You are subscribed and downloading the latest show with access to our archives as a VIP member. Multiple shows per day. All our 14 free shows per week are ad-free and plug-free. And we have a ton of VIP exclusive shows, a real variety. You might not be able to fit all of them into your schedule, but you know, like Netflix or a grocery store, it's nice to have options and choices. And there's always something new there, and there's always something in the archives that interests you that our podcast will shed new light on or entertain you as we talk about it. So a lot of factors to VIP membership, but certainly our VIP exclusive shows are a big part of it. Check out more details on our sign-up page, pwtorch.com/govip. It's a cool-looking webpage that really gives you an overview with all the logos and bullet points of what comes with a membership. And we would love for you to support us, and we'll give you a lot of bang for your buck in return. Follow us on Twitter at PWTorch. Follow or visit our website, pwtorch.com, for Frank's Raw and SmackDown previews each week, live Raw, Dynamite, NXT, and SmackDown coverage throughout the week, live pay-per-view coverage, special editorials, breaking news, so much more. PWTorch.com. We appreciate your support. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, at The Wade Keller. Frank, it's been a blast. Thank you so much for taking time to do this on this evening.
Oh, hey, Wade, always a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. And it was, absolutely a blast to do this show with you. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks to our callers, our emailers, our listeners, and we'll talk to you next time.